Peter Eiling, you have been a choral singer for 70 years and have sung in at least 18 choirs. Welcome to our new BBC feature, Me and My Choirs. Are you from a musical family and where did you grow up?
Not a particularly musical family. First of all, thank you for inviting me to do this. My mother was a reasonably competent pianist, up to the level of accompanying hymns at Sunday school. And both my parents sang in the chapel choir, and father later joined the Hexham Male Voice Choir and mother the Hexham Festival Chorus, which was a chorus society. So yes, reasonably musical. I grew up quite literally in the middle of a field, about 3 miles north of Hexham and 4 fields south of Hadrian's Wall.
And what was the first choir that you sang in? Were you a boy soprano or had your voice broken at that stage?
I reckon I was about 9 when I joined the chapel choir with my parents. So at that age, no, my voice hadn't broken.
And did you know, even at a young age, how important singing would become to you?
No, I had no idea. Mother was always singing hymns or parts of the Messiah or other oratorios around the house or humming, which she did for the rest of her life. So I was brought up with music in the house. We had an old wind-up gramophone and various records and things. So, yes, I was surrounded by music. I was an only child, and living in the middle of a field, I had nothing much else to do except listen to music.
It actually sounds very similar to my own childhood in some ways. So, you qualified as a civil engineer and became a builder of bridges and a maker of roads and all things like that. Tell us how that came about.
Partly by accident. I started school at a very small village school, less than 100 pupils, 3 classrooms, 3 teachers, 3 classes in each room. I managed to pass the 11 plus and went to Hexham Grammar School, which was an equally small school, less than 200 boys, with a catchment area of nearly 1,000 square miles, covering about half of Northumberland. All through that school, I was inclined to the arts side, right up to O-levels, partly because of my mother's reading. She was particularly well read in English literature, history, geography. So when I took O-levels, I decided that I would be going into the arts sixth. But during the holidays, I was beginning to have second thoughts about that. And when the O-level results came through, I'd done better, in fact, in physics and maths than I thought. And I was quite keen on physics, so I decided to change to the science side.
I was going to say, you must have been a fairly good mathematician to end up as a civil engineer.
Well, good enough, at least. But having got back to school, I realised that the science side had been working not only flat out since the O-levels, but also through the holidays, so I was miles behind. And I was a bit disillusioned. My parents obviously were aware that I was disillusioned. And suddenly out of the blue, one day my father came home with an advert, a job advert, for a student civil engineer. The chief civil engineer of British Rail was looking for student civil engineers. Education requirement was supposed to be A-level maths and physics, which I didn't have, but small print underneath it said minimum qualification, O-level maths and physics. So without much hope, we applied. And I was interviewed and got the job. So I then had a rather unusual training, if you like. This sounds rather Dickensian, but I was actually an article pupil. I didn't go to university, obviously. I became an article pupil with the chief civil engineer, signed on for a 5-year training period.
And your profession meant that you went where there were bridges to be built or roads to be built. Tell us, before we get on to choirs, what were the most exciting projects that you were involved with in your professional life?
I was very lucky that throughout the 50 years I worked, I had a fairly good balance of road work and bridge works. Obviously, the best projects were the last two projects, which were major bridges by any standard. Worldwide, they were major bridges. But it was an interesting life throughout.
Tell us a bit more about the two big ones.
I came to those via a sort of tortuous route, if you like, because early in my career, the first 15 years, 12 years, were spent designing bridges. I then did a mixture of design of roads and construction, working on sites, and I liked site work. I worked on the M25, where the major structures, in fact, were the two tunnels, Enfield and Epping, which you may have well driven through. I then was asked to go to Singapore for 2 years. I was seconded to the Public Works Department there for another tunnel project. And when I came back, the firm I worked for had just been awarded the supervision of the second Severn Crossing, which, of course, was the biggest bridge in the UK at the time being constructed. So that took 7 years, and we moved to Bristol for that. When that was coming to an end, I was involved in tendering for similar, although more complicated, bridge in Greece, also a seven-year project. So we then moved to Greece for that one, and that, in fact, was probably the finest job I worked on.
Fascinating. All okay. This movement, Peter, meant that you, I guess, took the choirs where you found them, so to speak. Tell us about the most important and enjoyable choirs of your working life.
Difficult. The best choir musically was the Bristol Bar Choir. I moved there because of the Severn Bridge. This was in 1991. By which time I'd already sung in many choirs wherever I'd been, usually two choirs wherever I was. That was musically the best choir, a very good conductor. And that was, we produced a CD there of the Rachmaninoff Vespers, sung entirely a cappella. And that's my favourite piece of all the works I ever sang.
And how difficult was it to find time for music, along with a very busy and demanding professional life?
As far as choirs are concerned, it wasn't too difficult to find generally 2 evenings a week for 2 choirs. As I said earlier, a lot of my work was on site. The busiest time on site is during the summer, when choirs generally aren't singing anyway. So it wasn't too difficult.
And you have a grade 8 in singing, a grade 8 in music theory, and a grade 6 as an organist. And you thought about training as a music teacher at one stage. What happened there?
When I went to Colchester in 1971 and joined the Colchester Choral Society, I realised that I should be able to sing better. And it happened that the MD there of that choir was a lecturer at the Colchester School of Music. This at the time was one of only 2 institutions outside universities where they taught to degree standard in music. And he said, yes, we run an evening class, probably suit you. So I signed up for the evening class and was very soon told that I was expected to take the exams because their funding depended on how many people they got through exams. So I was a bit of a surprise. And although at that stage I already was up to grade 5 or beyond in organ and theory, I had to go back to square one, of course, and start the singing at grade 1. So it took me about 4 years to work through to grade 8. And as I passed grade 5, it was suggested I ought to take that through as well to 8. So I did, and ended up with 8 in both theory and singing.
I seem to remember saying that Margaret Thatcher was involved in this process at some stage.
Yes. When I went to Colchester, I joined a sort of quasi-government organisation that they set up for the design and construction of motorways. This was the age of motorways, of course, the 60s and the 70s, which was why I left the railway, really. I saw the future in motorways. But when Margaret Thatcher came along, she decided in the late 60s to privatise these government design teams. And for a while, the situation looked a bit dodgy, because the motorway era was coming to an end and there would be redundancies, and we didn't quite know how the office was going to be run down. So, as I say, I'd already got grade 8 in theory and singing, and I was looking for possible alternative means of income. We had a very large garden. I'd already dug a big pond and stocked it with fish and plants and what things, and I was growing hundreds of conifer trees and all sorts of other things. A third issue seemed to be the possibility of teaching music. The option was either to take a diploma in singing or a diploma in teaching. And I never had really had the temperament for singing solos, although I did quite a lot of it. But I thought teaching would be a safer bet. So I started the teaching diploma. But then the whole situation of the closure of the road construction units was sorted out. And I moved overnight from being a quasi-civil servant to a member of a large consulting, international consulting firm.
Now, you started your singing career as that most noblest of callings, a bottom bass. You're, of course, now a tenor. When did that happen and how did you manage the transition?
Well, it was managed without any medical intervention, I can tell you that.
I'm relieved to hear that.
Yes. I started as a bottom bass. This was in Hexham Male Voice Choir when I was 15, actually, which was quite young, I suppose. But the chap who ran that was also the choir master of the chapel choir, so he knew my voice, and he suggested I started as a bottom bass. I've been lucky that I've always had a fairly good range. The next choir I joined, I put myself down as a baritone, which was the York Male Voice Choir. Then I moved. I went from there to Carlisle, actually. That's the only place I've ever lived. I was there for 4 years, which didn't actually have a choir other than the cathedral, which, of course, was no use to me. But I went to Ayr, and they were short of tenors. So they asked me to try being a tenor, so I started off as a second tenor. Then when the tenors split, I discovered that I could get as high as anybody else, so I became a top tenor.
And you sang the part of Don Ottavio in Mozart's Don Giovanni on several occasions. Don Ottavio, I think of as a highly principled, but he's one who was wholly ineffective in his quest to avenge his great love, Donna Elvira, for the murder of her father by Giovanni. But ineffective and Peter Riley don't seem to me to go together. How did you get on with the character?
I credit that entirely to the music of Mozart. And the librettist, I suppose, to some extent, not to me.
Back to choirs. If you could relive just one performance, what would it be?
I think it would be the one I mentioned early, which is the Rachmaninoff Vespers. There'll be another reason. As I say, I've got the CD of that. But it's another one that I play quite frequently because my wife, Janet, is the contralto soloist in that on that particular recording. It was recorded live. And it was a wonderful experience.
I must get to know it. It's not a piece I know at all.
Well, don't listen to the St. Petersburg Choir if you've got that one. We are far better.
Right. Okay. And who's the most inspirational conductor you've sung under and why?
I would have to say Dr. Glyn Jenkins, who was the conductor of the Bristol Bach Choir. We sang there for 5 years, and he was the best choral trainer I ever sang under, particularly for dynamics. When we first moved to Bristol, Janet and I said we'd go and listen to several choirs and pick the best one to join, or try to join. And that was the first one we went to hear, doing the Christmas concert. The very first thing they sang, we both looked at each other and said, right, that's the choir we want to join. And he trained the choir to a very high standard, the dynamics and everything. And for the Rachmaninoff, for instance, you can imagine what the bass part is like with Russian choir. I mean, we had fairly good bottom basses, but every week before rehearsal, he gave them a session on their own, just singing below bottom F. And that sort of thing just paid off in the final concert.
So they obviously sang quite a wide repertoire apart from just Bach.
Oh, yes. I think that's true of most Bach choirs, actually. Some of them seem to sing anything but Bach, some of them. But, yeah, we sang what any other chorus side would sing, Verdi, and more modern pieces as well, all the requiems. And some modern pieces, Finzian and some of the others, yeah.
You mentioned Janet, who's your wife and also a long-standing member of BDCS. Did you meet through music?
We met in the Colchester Choral Society. We both joined more or less the same time, actually. And that's 50 years ago now.
And are there any works that you really regret not having had the opportunity to sing?
I can't say there are because I don't listen to other music that much, to be honest. I enjoy very much the ones that we have sung, and many of them I would like to sing again. Quite often do sing them again, of course. But I don't know of any other works that I'd like to sing.
Now, there was a reasonably long period when the Bingham Choral Society tenor section had only 4 or 5 regular members. How challenging was that, and how did you cope with it personally?
Having done quite a lot of solo work, to be honest, it wasn't really challenging. Singing, even by myself, more or less, it wasn't too difficult. What was challenging was trying not to oversing, because if you're one against about a dozen basses or whatever, it's very difficult not to oversing, and halfway through you find you're running out of voice.
And what stands out in your memory as the best Bingham Choral performance that you've been part of?
I really have no idea. I'm sorry, I can't. I just can't think of. I mean, it depends on what the work is to some extent. There are some works I prefer more than others, but I can't say, to be honest.
So, do you listen to choral music at all when you're at home, so to speak?
It depends on your definition of choral music, I suppose. We have, say, 12 CDs of the Cambridge Singers, and we have loads of requiems by different choirs, so we listen to them quite a bit, yes.
I think quite a few choir members are finding it difficult to carry on singing during the pandemic. Have you been able to keep up your motivation? And if so, how have you done it?
I have to confess I haven't. What I have done when the music has been issued, for instance, Guy's new music, I played through it and familiarised myself to some extent with it, but I haven't followed the lessons. Sorry for that.
Fair enough. Finally, have you any words of encouragement or caution that you would offer to someone just starting out in choral singing?
A lot of people, I think, join a choir to initially sing the first piece that the choir are going to sing. What I would say to them is, do not be put off if the next piece isn't entirely to your liking. I've sang a lot of pieces which, at the first read through, I thought, I don't think much to that. But by the time you've learned it and performed it, it's surprising how a lot of these, even modern pieces, grow on you. And don't be put off by something like that. Once you've joined the choir, stick with it. And by and large, you'll find you end up liking most of what you sing.
I think that's extremely good advice. I think many, many of us would feel the same thing. Tell us how it works, looking for new choirs when you move and deciding which choirs to be part of.
Oh, this varies a bit, of course. I already mentioned how we got into the Bristol Bach Choir simply by going to listen to the choir and then choosing which one we wanted. At one stage, I was seconded to the Public Works Department in Singapore for 2 years. I was lucky that 3 weeks before that, I was doing a feasibility study in Indonesia, did a stopover in Singapore. I happened to mention to the local manager that I was interested in singing. Were there any choirs in Singapore? So he said, "You let me know." Day one, when I got back to work in Singapore, I saw the manager and he said, "Oh, by the way, I've got 2 contacts for you. One for the International Festival Chorus and one for the Singapore Symphony Chorus." So within a couple of weeks, I joined both of those. And the interesting thing was there that the festival chorus was 75% expats and 25% Singaporeans, whereas the other one was exactly the other way around, 75% Singaporeans and 25% expats. And again, when I went to Greece, obviously we knew nobody when we went to Greece, but through local contacts, we discovered there was, in fact, everybody told us before we went to Greece, "Oh, there's no choirs there. You want to join a choir?" We actually found a choral society in our local little town. And within a few weeks, we joined that. And that way, we made a lot of friends. I mean, the Greeks are very musical. They were very slow to learn anything. It took 3 months just to learn the Hallelujah Chorus. But that was largely down to the musical director, who unfortunately couldn't count. And he would teach the altos something in one time and then teach the basses the same phrase in a different time. And, of course, wondered why they didn't fit together. But it was an interesting experience.
I was thinking it probably take me three months to learn the Greek for the Hallelujah Chorus. Anyway.
Oh, we didn't sing it in Greek. We actually sang most things in Greek, to be honest. But obviously when we did things like that and... One interesting thing was we were singing something which was, I didn't know what language it was to start with. It was actually French. It was Carmen. But they'd sort of Greekified it into their language. We were reading this, and it took us a while to realize it was, in fact, French. And once we realized that, of course, we were away. As soon as I knew we were going to Greece, I asked the MD of the firm if he would give us a Linguaphone course. So they paid for that, which Janet and I both followed. But to be honest, it was hard work. I mean, we never forgot that the first lesson in the Linguaphone course was to learn the alphabet, which they said should take you a few days. Well, I mean, it took us a few months, to be honest, to master the alphabet alone. But, no, I mean, I added up the other day that I've sung in, I think it's either 14 or 15 languages in my singing career. Greek was just another one. Most of the languages, I haven't a clue what I'm singing. Even in Latin, you know, I'm never sure exactly what it is. In fact, even in English, sometimes I'm worried.
You've been listening to me and my choirs, and my guest has been Peter Eiling. Peter, thank you very much for being part of this program.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.